Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Let me reintroduce myself to the listening audience here. My name's Tim Wildman, and I used to be on this show a lot until I went away for 9 days or so. But anyway, just got back from Israel.
So you went to a good place.
I did. Went to the Holy Land. Ed Battagliano, good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
Fred Jackson.
Good to have you back from the Holy Land.
Thank you. Had a bunch of folks went with us.
Over 100, did you say?
160.
Wow.
This time. It was our largest group. We had three buses. Now, each bus has its own guide, so, you know, you're really, you feel like you're on a tour with 40 or 50 people in terms of people in your group. Mm. But it was a wonderful experience for our folks, and got to meet a lot of good people who support us and listen. AFR, just want to say hello to everybody out there who went with me, and Allison, my wife, and my son Wesley. We hosted the group, and we'll be going again next year, March of 2020, Lord willing. And just a great time to be able to see the places that you read about in the Bible. Mm. You've been, Fred.
Yes.
Ed's been, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
fantastic. You'll never be the same, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. So we had a wonderful time over there, and look forward to going again. Let's say in 2020, we'll be announcing our dates in about a month from now. We'll be announcing our dates for 2020. If you want to put that on your calendar, a lot of people have going to the Holy Land on their bucket list.
Yeah.
And it doesn't disappoint when you see Bethlehem and Jericho and Jerusalem and all the places there. And the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River. And you look over here, and this is where this took place. Mm-hmm. And you look over here, and you go, that's where that story in the Bible took place.
Yeah.
So,
this is going to sound funny, but what struck me the most when I went is how ordinary everything looks. For some reason, you expect, okay, this is where the demons went into the herd of swine. They ran off.
Right.
And for some reason, I don't know, you expect to see angels there or something, but it's a hill. I mean, what I'm saying is God worked in ordinary circumstances, right, in ordinary little towns, mm-hmm, in a little country, and did amazing things. Yeah. And you just go, wow.
Except on our tour, things glow.
Well, now that's what I'd expected.
And we do have angels that appear at various times.
I should have gone with you guys.
Right, during our tour. I don't know what others experience, but we do have that. So
angels,
anyway, all right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. In the meantime, we had twins arrive for Walker,
yes,
and Lexi, and so we've got twin boys there.
I told Walker, this was on Wednesday when he was leaving to go, he said, well, I think this is it. I said, tell your wife Lexi, because your mom and dad will be coming back sometime on Friday, if she can just stay in labor for two extra days, you guys can be there
right
for the birth.
We wanted to be here for the birth, but she went ahead.
She's not a team player.
She went ahead and delivered.
She had her baby.
So they came out. And so anyway, all's healthy with the babies. And
amen.
Walker,
that's important.
Walker, I don't know. What month will Walker be back on the show with us, you think?
It's not going to be anytime soon, I don't think.
I was going to ask, has Walker
maternity
slept?
Leave.
Has Walker slept is a good question. We maybe don't want him on the program because we may not know what he's going to say. Since he's had delirious, probably, of sleep deprivation. All right. So anyway, if Walker were here, he would tell you can watch this show on Facebook and YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues and watch this show on Facebook or YouTube, live video streaming. And Facebook also, we post the stories that we talk about here on the program. And so you can have the original news sources that we use and use them yourself or pass them on to your friends. Okay, not a lot happening out there, is there, Fred?
Oh, no, quiet weekend. I'm just looking at live right now from Washington, D.C., is a news conference with Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, who's also the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. What's he talking about? He's talking about the release to the public of a summary from Special Counsel Robert Mueller, who finally ended after 2+ years his investigation, and he came up with the conclusion, are you ready for this drum roll? There was no collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. President Trump has been telling the truth now for the last 2 years plus. Mm-hmm. The media did not believe him, CNN, MSNBC, and the bunch. The Democrats did not believe him. It was a bad day for the Democrats yesterday.
I don't know if I agree totally. I know what you're saying, Fred. I don't know if I agree totally that the media and the Democrats didn't believe President Trump when he said, I did not collude, or my campaign did not collude, or what's the other word they use? Work with the Russians to affect the election.
Mm-hmm.
Is if the Democrats and the media didn't care whether it was true or not.
Yeah,
they wanted, they wanted to keep the narrative going, so it is like a albatross around the neck of the president and him trying to govern.
Mm-hmm.
They always say, well, the Russian investigation is still going on,
right?
We can't trust this president. We don't know who's going to go to jail. Maybe Don Jr., Ivanka. We don't know who's going. The whole family's probably going to jail. That's what they were saying, the news media and many in the Democrats. Well, as it turns out, you can say what you want to, but they were exonerated.
Yes.
I know the liberals are saying, and I don't know what the summaries may have used that word. I don't know the word exonerate. I remember reading it in the news stories. But if there's no more indictments, and if you have concluded, has Robert Mueller, with all the time, energy, effort, money, that they put into this for 2 years, and you can't prove that the president
conspired or coordinated. Right.
That's the word I was looking for. Then guess what? You have exonerated him.
That's right.
Yeah, no, and I think Attorney General William Barr is trying to, he's trying to be fair-minded. He said it did not prove any indictable causes against the president, but he's also saying it doesn't exonerate him. But I agree with you, Tim. I think if you can't prove what Robert Mueller set out to prove with all he had Michael Cohen, he had his attorney
shut down his offices,
singing like a canary. And if anybody had proof that the president had done these things with Russia and regarding the election, it would have been Michael Cohen.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Cohen would have given Robert Mueller anything to get a less of a prison sentence. And nothing.
No.
How can you say that's not exonerating the president?
Well, what they're talking about now is they haven't been able to come up with enough proof to exonerate him on the issue of whether he tried to interfere.
Right. This was with the firing of Comey.
With the investigation.
Yeah.
But there's not enough proof even to do that. But that's the Democrats are going to run with it. Anyway, last night, president returning from Florida last night, obviously reacting to it, cut number 8.
It was just announced there was no collusion with Russia, the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. There was no collusion with Russia. There was no obstruction and none whatsoever. And it was a complete and total exoneration. It's a shame that our country had to go through this. To be honest, it's a shame that your president has had to go through this before I even got elected.
Well, it still raises the question, and this is where we have to go next, is how do we get to the point that Mueller was appointed? And that's what Lindsey Graham is holding a news conference right now. I think that is the next step of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to call back people like Glenn Simpson from Fusion GPS, who hired Steele to come up with this dossier, which the FBI took to the FISA court to start getting wiretaps, et cetera, on Trump people. So that's where now Michael Horowitz, we're going to find out. But Lindsey Graham, James Comey, pointing out many questions. He put this little image out there last night with trees behind it. Many questions.
That was weird.
Lindsey Graham comes back and says, "You're right, and we'll see you soon."
See you soon.
Yes. Right, in other words, we're going to have James Comey come back
to the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yeah.
Well, let me just to put some more perspective on this thing. Robert Mueller's team, by the way, folks, a special counsel hires, and Robert Mueller was the special counsel to investigate the Russian collusion with the Trump campaign and the Trump presidency, I guess. It's going on for 2 years now. And almost all his team of lawyers that he hired were Democrats, many of them financial supporters of Hillary Clinton. I say many of them. I don't remember all the numbers. I just know that it was the number of lawyers was tilted almost exclusively to the Democrat side. So they had they would have been aggressive against President Trump. You see what I'm saying here?
Yes.
These weren't neutral bystanders.
Right.
These were people who had it. They're ideologically liberal Democrats. Now, they interviewed 500 witnesses, 2,800 subpoenas. Now, they did nail a few people along the way for things that were unrelated to collusion with the Democrats.
With the Russians.
I mean, excuse me, collusion with the Democrats. Yes, Russians. They entrapped Michael Flynn, General Flynn. We all know how that story went.
Right.
Basically, entrapment. But it still cost him basically all his a lot of money to defend himself because the government doesn't defend him. They got Manafort on tax issues.
All Manafort.
Totally unrelated to.
Yeah,
his time
totally
to
unrelated.
Trump.
Yeah. They got Cohen, Michael Cohen on same type thing, right?
Several kinds of crimes. Yeah. Unrelated, and what they did was they used for Manafort and Michael Cohen, they used the prosecution, the threat of prosecution in prison
right.
for those other things to say, all right, maybe we can make some kind of a deal here. You tell us what you know about President Trump. Mm-hmm. And apparently there was no there.
In other words, they squeezed and squeezed and squeezed and squeezed for 2 years with almost unlimited resources and money. And power, the power of the subpoena, and got nothing.
That's right.
Got nothing, and you've got all the media that hate Trump. Mm-hmm. And they've been doing this for 2 years or more themselves, and they come up with nothing. As I've said before, Robert Mueller, I think the liberal news media would have found out Russia collusion information before Mueller would have, because they hate President Trump so much, they would have found it had it been out there.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to your point, you were saying, Fred, that now it's time, based on Lindsey Graham, now it's time to look, especially with a new attorney general, how this originated in the first place.
Yes.
Because this whole thing, to me, was a collusion on the part of the FBI, the ideologically driven FBI, to go after President Trump.
I think maybe we'll never find all this out, but I believe Barack Obama, when he was president, when they started to see the tea leaves in 2016, they came up with a plan to discredit Donald Trump. And he worked with Loretta Lynch, then Attorney General, and as we've seen in testimony and messages between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, there was a plan to discredit Donald Trump.
And to defend Hillary Clinton.
She got off scot-free.
Right.
Peter Strzok was in charge of that, not even put under testimony.
James Comey, he was in on it too.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Kellyanne Conway was asked about, just to get to the media aspect of all of this. That's where the part of the collusion was between the Democrats and the media on this. Here's what Kellyanne Conway, cut number 5, had to say about the media's role in this fiasco.
Not a single person in the media who got the 2016 elections so chronically and embarrassingly wrong lost their jobs. And they probably won't hear too. Look what they did to Brett Kavanaugh. The second most popular story in the Trump presidency was the Russian collusion fake hoax nonsense. The first, the most covered stories I read last night in a condensed period of time was Brett Kavanaugh. And they treated him the same way. That was a microcosmic version of what they tried to do to President Trump and his campaign and his family for the last 2 years. It's a drive-by. They abandon all standards, all personal ethics, all professional duty. Do you realize major papers in this country won Pulitzer Prizes over their reporting on something that is totally fake?
So there you have it.
They won.
I didn't know that. On their coverage of the Russian collusion story?
Either the collusion or the Kavanaugh story. Oh, okay. I'm not sure what she was referencing there. But she's so right. I people have been suspicious of mainstream media for a long time.
Right.
I mean, Pew Research had
way down at the bottom.
Journalists with lawyers.
Right.
You know, right
way
at the
down
bottom.
At the bottom of.
But now this has proven. I mean, people who aren't in the media are coming forward and saying, what is it with CNN? Night after night after night, somebody was talking about going through the airports over the last couple of years, and CNN has some unbelievable contract with airports. They're the only television that you see in there. But day after day, hour after hour, almost every headline, negative Trump, negative Trump. I'm sorry. This is just hard to believe. That's not journalism anymore.
But it's not going to stop. House Democrats have already said they are going to continue. You know, Gerald Nadler, the House Judiciary Chairman, he says we're going forward with our investigations of obstruction of justice, abuses of power.
And I've got a clip of Nadler and also of Mark Meadows, Congressman Mark Meadows, responding. But first you're going to hear just exactly what you're saying.
This is Nadler
yesterday in New York. Cut number two.
We will ask the Attorney General to testify before the House Judiciary Committee. The Attorney General's comments make it clear that Congress must step in to get the truth and provide full transparency to the American people.
If he wants to get to the truth, let's bring in Glenn Simpson, who started this with a fake dossier, who actually has claimed the fifth. Let's go ahead and bring in a lot of the individuals who put this false narrative out there. If we really want to get to the truth, let's be about the truth.
There you are.
You know, this is a be careful what you wish for moment, I think, for the Democrats. I think the wise political move for Democrats would be at this point just to move on. You know, they're going to oppose President Trump, for what he had for breakfast every day. So that's going to continue, but the idea of impeachment or keeping on this Russian thing is a loser for them. They may think it's a winner. I don't think it is with the average American out there who maybe is not Democrat or Republican. I just think people I just don't think it's a winner for them.
Their view, I'm guessing the majority of people are going to go, well, Robert Mueller was independent.
Right.
He didn't find anything.
Right.
The Democrats clearly hate Trump. They're
so
biased.
It's just political.
It's just political. I think you're right. I think it could hurt them.
And also, if you start getting into an investigation, the other side, the minority, does get to do their own. Asking the questions and calling witnesses.
Well, and they're going to in the Senate. Yeah.
Yes. So my point is, be careful what you wish for. Mm-hmm. If the Democrats want to really find out what, you know, as they're saying, we need to get to the bottom of this, find out what the truth is. Like, so, who was the gentleman we were just hearing from right there?
That was Mark Meadows.
Okay, Mark Meadows is right. Okay, then let's find out.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Democrats really want to find out.
Right.
Because what happened was,
they want to destroy Trump, and that's it.
I tell you the scariest part of all this, and I don't know where this goes. A lot of this depends on William Barr, the new attorney general. But it is frightening the way that the Justice Department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation in this case was controlled by Democrats. They may not be Democrats by party registration, but I'm talking about all these emails and texts and all this stuff that came. The fact that this investigation was started on a phony dossier paid for by the Clinton campaign. Something so flimsy as that. John McCain, the former senator from Arizona, somebody gave him this dossier, and he gave it to the FBI. If you want to know why President Trump still doesn't like John McCain, right, even though he's passed away, it's for that
right
reason. John McCain never liked Donald Trump anyway, so I would guess Donald Trump thinks John McCain was part of this.
Right.
Because he didn't want me to be president. So.
And the irony of it was this dirt, this from this dossier, came from Russia. So the real collusion here, if you want to talk about collusion to influence the 2016 election, you would say the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democrats,
yes,
colluded with Russians,
yes,
to try to dig up dirt. Now, there's nothing illegal about finding opposition research overseas, but the only real connection here appears to be, other than maybe some of President Trump's past hotel dealings in Russia, was the Clinton campaign.
Yes.
Right. And the fact
with Russia.
You couple all this with all this colluding within the power of the Justice Department and you have a little red and then Lynch, then the Attorney General telling James Comey, you better change that to matter. To the word, remember they had the word investigation used, mm-hmm, was going to be used.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In a press conference or whatever. And Loretta Lynch, James Comey's boss, the Attorney General, who is a cabinet member of President Obama, went into him and said, you better change that, mm-hmm, to use the word matter. It's a matter. It's not an investigation. That's tampering with whatever you call it. Not witness tampering, but that's
obstruction.
You're obstructing.
Well, I don't know if it's, but it's,
well, maybe not legally, technically, but you know what she's doing.
They're supposed to be impartial.
Damage control.
And if you're normally going to use the word investigation, but for political reasons you want to use a word that makes Hillary Clinton look better, then your investigation's not impartial. It is political.
And remember, that suggestion came at the same time that Loretta Lynch was meeting with Bill Clinton,
right,
on a tarmac.
Private meeting.
Right. Private meeting.
Private, yeah, meeting just before his wife was supposed to be interviewed by the FBI.
Yeah, but guys, that they were just talking grandkids.
Okay. They may have been.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I know you are. But they may have been talking about grandkids, but it was still highly you don't do that. It's unethical.
No,
it's inappropriate.
Of course it is.
But also the fact, all I need to know in this whole matter was it about Hillary Clinton and the fact that she was sending classified emails over her private server she put in the bathroom at her house, mm-hmm, to avoid oversight by the Congress, mm-hmm, is that James Comey's FBI, when they went to interview her about this, they didn't require that she be under oath.
Right.
That's all you need to know. That's not all you need to
know.
That's so telling about where the bias in favor of him.
And Peter Strzok was writing the statement exonerating her before they interviewed her.
Yeah,
right. Before they interviewed her, and they let her lawyers, a couple of her top aides, sit in on the interview that she did, 2-hour interview she did with the FBI, which was not under
They gave own. Immunity to people in her campaign that could have,
right,
shed light,
right,
on destroyed external hard drives. I mean,
the whole thing's corrupt to the,
right,
core.
Absolutely.
And I think Lindsey Graham may be the worst nightmare, mm-hmm, for all these list of characters, which,
yep,
would be a great John Grisham novel, by
yes,
the way.
It would.
Am I right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
It's amazing what's happened with this the last couple of years. But the bottom line is that the president of the United States is now exonerated. The liberal media won't use that word. He wasn't indicted. None of his family members were indicted. The investigation's over, and he's free to go on with his presidency. And that's a huge thing. We'll be back in a moment.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Frank Turek of Cross Examined.
What is Islam? Where did it come from? Is the Quran really true? Could the Quran be the word of God? I mean, there's a lot of people out there that say it is. Is it really? Could it be?
We'll also have news headlines and analysis from American Family News. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've been all over the country helping disaster victims who lose everything.
It's truly a blessing. I really don't have the words to express.
And yet, they see a glimmer of hope when a volunteer shows up.
Building the home, that's the second reason we're here. The number one reason is to share the gospel and give them hope.
It's everything that's right in America. I mean, it really represents the best that we have to offer.
That's one of the main reasons for doing it, is being able to be the hands and feet of Jesus and coming out and working with so many wonderful volunteers.
I just feel like it's important in this day and age to teach a child how to serve.
Please go to our website, 8daysofhope.com, and click on Get Involved. Submit your email address, and the next time we go anywhere with a disaster, we'll invite you to come along as well.
I love coming in the job room because you can see these pieces of paper. They aren't just a piece of paper.
Right.
It's a family that's hurting, and it's a gospel opportunity.
And I just thank God, you know, for this moment. I mean, I'll be back in my home, and I know it's going to be awesome.
Come love others with 8 Days of Hope.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
A boy punished for honoring the military. That story next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes from Fox News, and one of the things I love about Liberty University is the broad vision they have for their students. Instead of simply preparing them for a career, Liberty helps students grow into mature men and women of character, striving to impact their career fields for Christ. Liberty University is the largest Christian university in the world, offering more than 550 programs of study. Visit liberty.edu to learn more. Again, that's liberty.edu. Tyler Carlin is an eighth grader at Salina Middle School in Ohio. He decided to make a replica of the Battlefield Cross for a project in his history class. The Battlefield Cross includes a pair of empty boots, a helmet, and a rifle. In place of the rifle, Tyler used a Nerf gun, all approved, he said, by his teacher. But when Tyler presented the project in class, he was sent to the office, suspended for 3 days, charged with bringing a toy gun on school property. Tyler says he just wanted to make a memorial to honor fallen soldiers, but the school district refuses to budge. Salina is a very conservative town, and many turned out to show their support for Tyler. His parents also hired an attorney, hoping to clear their son's record and at the very least get an apology. How about some common sense here, folks? I mean, is that too much to ask? I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues, the name of the show. American Family Radio is the network you are listening to. I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano and Fred Jackson. And the headline today is that Robert Mueller's investigation is over and they found no collusion with the Russians on the part of the Trump campaign or Trump presidency, right?
Right.
And after 2 years of investigation by Robert Mueller and...
Is it 500 witnesses?
2,800 subpoenas. And so... There you go.
The only figure that's missing is the tens of millions of dollars spent, taxpayers' money.
Yeah, and
well, it's not missing. I mean, the lawyers got
that
it
was but, used. Yeah. and the fact that remember another big story here is you won't hear this in the liberal news media is that special counsels are designed to investigate a potential crime that is cited. This was a special counsel in search of a crime.
Yes.
That was, and the evidence, in quotes, was very flimsy at best, that anything had been...
It was mere speculation.
Yeah, that President Trump had colluded with the, with Vladimir Putin to change the voting machines in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and... Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, right?
Wisconsin.
So, all right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Our guest now is Gary DeMar. Gary is the president of American Vision, and he has written many, many books on government and public policy and moral issues and biblical issues, and he joins us now. Gary, good morning.
Morning, Tim. It's been a while.
Yeah. You weren't involved in the Russian collusion, were you?
Well, I didn't want anybody to know that, but okay. I've been down here in my basement,
okay,
you know, working with Putin and trying to change America. So.
I got you. Well, yeah, we haven't talked in a while. So, what are you doing nowadays?
Basically, the same stuff. I've been writing, as you've mentioned, and speaking, and just trying to, you know, of course, you and the American Family Association and I and many others have been warning about this type of political pressure to continue to centralize political power and to diminish the sovereignty and the power of the states and to impose a very leftist, socialistic worldview on people. I mean, this we've seen this type of thing coming. Now it's blatant. I mean, to use a special counsel to do something like this, where there was really, I mean, absolutely no evidence. This whole thing was put together based upon hearsay pressure coming from, you know, political insiders in order to gain political power, in order to literally reshape the foundations of American government.
Hey, Gary, but I want to get into this with you, the what you just talked about, but. First of all, tell our listeners your God in Government series is a bestseller, a book series, God in Government, A Biblical, Historical, and Constitutional Perspective by Gary DeMar, our guest. Tell our listeners what that's, give our listeners an overview of that and then where they can go to look at it and or buy it.
Because most people, when they hear the word government, they think politics. The government, and the government did this today, the government did that, the government spent so much money, the government lowered or raised interest rates, the government, the government, the government. And so when we hear the word government today, we think politics. But in biblical terms, the only time the word government is used in the singular is for God's government in Isaiah chapter 9. Biblical government is decentralized. God's government is over all things, and then he has instituted three institutional governments, family government, church government, and civil government. And each of those governments has its own jurisdiction where it's supposed to operate, and each of those governments is limited in the amount of power and authority they have in those various jurisdictions. And undergirding those three governments is self-government. If the family goes bad and the church goes bad and the civil dimension of government goes bad, it's the result of poor self-government. That's the biblical model. Today, anytime something goes wrong in our nation, we tend to turn to the political realm to try to solve those problems. And so I wrote the God in Government in order to outline all the basic elements of how the Bible deals with government, beginning with self-government and going all the way through with education and economics, law, justice, whatever the case might be. And it's been a big seller in the homeschool movement, and people want to get a copy, they can go to AmericanVision.org, AmericanVision.org, and order it there.
AmericanVision.org. You know, what you said right there is very important, I think, about centralization of power, because that's what our founders, one of the main issues in creating our constitutional republic was to decentralize power. Because once you centralize power of government, then you begin to control all the people. And that's the history of the world, right?
Well, it is, yeah.
So
you go all the way back to the book of Genesis and just go all the way through, there was this constant desire to centralize power, and you get the Babylon. You have Nebuchadnezzar and his statue, and in chapter 4 he says, look at everything that I've done, and then finally God judges him, Belshazzar, the Medes and the Persians, you have the Greeks, you have the Romans, And even today, I mean, every tyrannical regime is the centralization of authority and power.
Gary, this is Ed. Do you ever get tired of hearing Christians now who fully believe, deeply believe, that Christians should have nothing to do with government because government is of the world? It's got nothing to do with the kingdom of God. It's got nothing to do with winning the lost. Do you ever get tired of hearing that? Because there's a large percentage, I don't know what the numbers are, but a large percentage of evangelicals who just believe that Christians have no business being involved with writing about it as you did, or being involved with trying to influence, or heaven forbid, running for it, government.
Yeah, I do get tired of it because it's. In fact, I actually wrote another book called Myths, Lies, and Half-Truths, which deal with a lot of those. Jesus didn't get mixed up in politics. Politics is dirty. There's a separation between church and state. Our citizenship is in heaven. You can't judge other people. You can go on and on with that. And it's called Myths, Lies, and Half-Truths, and I've dealt with those as well. And yet, the founding of our nation, I mean, you cannot go back to the early founding, 18th century, 17th century, and not see that Christians were the ones who gave us this great nation. And then to turn around and say Christians aren't to be involved in the area of government is just, it gives us some idea of where the educational process is today, not only in our schools, but even coming from our pulpits. I mean, in the Bible, I mean, think about it. You have two books of the Bible called Kings. The Bible is all about government, if you understand it in biblical terms. People will say, well, we were supposed to render under Caesar the things that are Caesar's. And I have to remind people, I said, first off, we don't live under Caesar. We live under the Constitution of the United States. If you want to maintain that that's our Caesar, I'll go along with you. But you have to remember that even Caesar is obligated to follow the directives of God. And we see that in the book of Romans 13, the civil magistrate is a deacon of God, a minister of God. As long as I've been doing this, and I've been doing it for a very long time, it does get frustrating to listen to these types of arguments. And then a lot of Christians then sit back and say, well, we're just supposed to go along with what the government has to say. But, you know, the First Amendment to the Constitution says that we have the right to a redress of grievances. We can go to our government and change it. We couldn't do that under Caesar.
Yeah, those people you're talking about. By the way, my book, had I written a book, Gary wrote a book about Christians who don't believe in civic or government engagement because
right.
it's dirty.
Right.
My book would be Why I Want to Slap My Brothers and Sisters, I think. That would probably be the title of my book. I don't know if that would be a bestseller or what. But that the reasons why our brothers and sisters give us for not wanting to be involved in politics and government, and I'm not saying that everybody has to watch Fox News 24/7
right.
or listen to AFR all the time, but even though that's not all we talk about. We talk right. about a lot of things, like we're talking to Gary right now about what the Bible has to say about God and government.
Right.
But we do talk current events and political issues. But listen, if you're going to say, I don't want to get involved in politics and government because it's not kingdom business, okay, then what you're saying to me is, I live in a land where I can make a difference on what our government does, and I'm saying, yet I choose to be hands-off.
Right.
So, the same person that would cite Romans 13 that the Christians must obey the government leaders, right?
Right.
That's what we're told, and that's true, as long as it doesn't call on us to disobey God.
Right.
We're supposed to be good citizens and obey the law. The same person that would tell me, Tim, Romans 13 calls on us to obey the law, would tell me, but we're not supposed to be involved in the lawmaking business.
Right.
We're supposed to leave that to the pagans.
Right.
Now, how much sense does that make? That's just idiocy. Yet you hear this false piety.
I think you should write that book with that title.
Why I Want to Slap?
Why I Want to Slap my brothers and sisters.
Okay.
In love.
I'll
put in love in there because it's
love,
Christian.
Got to be in
yeah.
love.
Yeah.
Yeah. Figuratively,
love, that's
not literally.
Right, Tim. In love.
Yeah.
But you think about the book of Acts. Here's the Apostle Paul who's been been persecuted by his fellow Jews. And, of course, the Romans were all about Roman peace. They didn't want insurrections, and they didn't want political trouble. And they, you know, they dragged Paul out, and they strung him up, and they were just about to beat him. And Paul said, "Would you beat a Roman citizen?" And the Roman soldier said, "Well, you know, I paid for my Roman citizenship." And Paul says, "I was born a Roman citizen." And so here you have the Apostle Paul appealing to his Roman citizenship in order to make his political case. And even earlier, he insisted that the Roman authorities apologize for what they had done to him in another place. There's no case that can be made that Christians shouldn't be involved in the political realm. My goal is in telling Christians about the political realm isn't just for Christians to get involved and use the power of government to force Christian compliance on people, that is, to force them to become Christians and so forth. Our goal should be to get civil government back into its proper limited sphere of governing, which helps everyone.
Otherwise, we lose our freedoms.
Yeah, we are. Yes, I mean, every day we're seeing this
right
taking place. That if Baker doesn't want to participate in a same sex wedding, that you got the state that ends up fining the Sweet Cakes by Melissa. I think that's the one.
Yeah,
$135,000. Yet you find leftists, you go into a restaurant and the owners of the restaurant tell them to get out of the restaurant. That's okay. I mean, if you don't want to make a cake for a same-sex wedding, right, we're going to fine you $135,000. Well, how can Christians sit back when those two types of things take place?
Right, exactly. Gary, the name of the book is what and where to find it?
God and Government, and you can get it at AmericanVision.org, AmericanVision.org.
Hey, Gary, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim. I appreciate talking to you.
Okay, bye-bye. It's Gary DeMar, and this is an excellent book. Gary spent his life studying this issue and writing on this issue, and it's subtitled A Biblical, Historical, and Constitutional Perspective. Next story, Fred.
Well, just before we leave the Mueller story, back to Senator Lindsey Graham, been holding a news conference as we've been speaking here. He said something very interesting just a moment ago. He said, the rule of law, justice, applies both to Republicans and Democrats. And what he's doing, he's wants to open up the minds of the American people to the fact for the last 2 years, the Democrats and the media have been painting the Republicans as the bad guys.
Right.
They're the guys that are breaking the laws, they're shady, et cetera, et cetera. Lindsey Graham is saying, hey, we're going to start looking at other things that Democrats were involved with. This morning on Sandy Rios' program, she spoke with former Justice Department Attorney J. Christian Adams. And that's exactly what J. Christian Adams was saying this morning. It's time to go looking at the Rod Rosenstein documents that were in play, the FISA warrant,
right,
and collusion between the FBI and the Justice Department, and maybe even the White House. Cut number 7.
I want to see the authorization memo from Rod Rosenstein that authorized this whole investigation. Did he commit people to an open-ended, undefined investigation that, by the way, apparently had no criminal predicate? I'd like to know about the FISA warrants. Remember, this whole thing, it was built on a lie. Well, the dossier was the lie that this entire Mueller investigation was built on, this crazed, lunatic fiction piece, and they've been colluding with the Holder leftovers and the Holder administration going on 12 years now.
All right, that was J. Christian Adams from this morning. This is where I believe Senator Lindsey Graham, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he wants to turn the page and turn the spotlight now on the Democrats and how we got to the Mueller investigation, because he believes that's where the crimes were committed.
You know, the person I feel most sorry for in all this, well, obviously President Trump. I mean, he's just been badgered by this investigation for 2 years now. As it turns out, there's nothing to it. As three of us suspected that there wouldn't be. I said all along that if President Trump had colluded with the Russians to affect the election, it would have been found out fairly quickly early on by the liberal news media, because they have more resources. They could have found out easily.
People would have been dying to leak proof.
Yes, yes. And the fact that the liberal news media couldn't.
Right.
And now, the person I feel most sorry for in all this is General Flynn. Hmm. Because he was set to be the, what was his job before he had to resign early on? National Security Advisor or? What is the title for that?
Yeah, that was it, wasn't it?
Was it National Security Advisor? Anyway, probably he had been a distinguished general and had wanted to serve his country and believed in the president.
Yeah,
and
he was National Security Advisor.
Okay, National Security Advisor. And what happened was James Comey, the FBI director, sent two of his men over to the White House when they were just moving in, so to speak, to interview General Flynn. General Flynn, unbeknownst to him, I mean, he was being investigated.
In fact, didn't he ask, do I need an attorney?
Do I need an attorney?
Oh, no, it's just, we're just chit-chatting, just informal. Mm-hmm. And then they ask him about, do you ever meet with any Russians? Wasn't that Michael Flynn?
And he
couldn't remember, and he said no, and they said, you lied to us.
Mm-hmm. Right, because he had some kind of it wasn't a consequential meeting, but he met with somebody who were Russian. So he, quote, lied about it, and I guess that's a subjective analysis. Somebody, a Democrat, would say, yeah, so he lied, and a Republican might say, no, he didn't intentionally lie. He
forgot about the meeting, didn't think it was connected.
But you send two of your FBI agents over to the White House. And what James Comey was saying, you remember the former FBI director, he was saying we sent him over there to basically, because they were just moving in.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying, to the White House and just getting settled, hadn't bringing their desk in, their books in, and everything else, and it'd be a great time, said James Comey, to go over there. And this is the way I interpreted what he said, and basically try to trick General Flynn into some kind of confession on.
Right.
And it worked because now he didn't get any jail time. But he had to spend all his personal money.
Right.
Savings at Sally's house, I think.
He did.
To
defend himself. You're up against the federal government.
I'm surprised that the White House has not allowed some money to defend your, I guess if it's a criminal thing, you're on your own. If it's a criminal investigation. I don't know.
Well,
I think the current Attorney General, General Flynn, you ought to sit down with General Flynn and say, tell me again what happened.
Yes.
You were told that you didn't need a lawyer. You were told you didn't need a lawyer present.
I think that's why they took so long to finish, to wrap that up. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
Was that Strzok? One Strzok, one of those that went over to investigate?
I'm not sure if Strzok was, but if you send two FBI agents over, they tell General Flynn, no, you don't need a lawyer. He asked.
Yep.
No.
Wow.
You don't need a lawyer. I'm sorry. In a court of law,
right,
you're in deep trouble.
Right.
And the government owes General Flynn.
That's why I say I feel most sorry for him and all this, because I think he was an American general that in the military that served his country and was prepared to do a job for his country in a role he was prepared for and qualified for immensely, a national security advisor to President Trump. And then this happened to him, within weeks?
Yeah.
Wasn't it within weeks of the administration taking over?
Yes. I mean, I think it was while they were basically moving in. Might have been during the transition.
But the way I remember James Comey commenting on this, and the way he was describing, do you remember this? When James Comey was talking about this a few months ago, and the way he was describing what they did with General Flynn just sounded to me like I don't know. It just sounded so un-American. It just sounded so like they were trying to entrap him. You know what I'm saying? That's the way I heard, interpreted what James Comey was saying. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. The question now is, what does Robert Mueller do now?
Well,
he retired. He got some.
Probably glad it's over, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm just teasing here.
Yeah,
he's been busy for the last 2 years, and you know, now he's done. The other big story, big story that happened.
Well, it got lost. This story kind of got lost this weekend.
Right.
There's some stuff going on at the Southern Poverty Law Center. I think most of our listeners are kind of familiar with them.
The SPLC out of Montgomery, Alabama.
Yep. And they have taken upon themselves a mantle of declaring who's a hate group and who's not.
Right.
Basically.
They're the self-appointed arbiter of hate.
Judge and jury.
Yes.
Well, what's happened to them in the last few days is that in their leadership, there have been several resignations. I'll put it that way. People, their leadership is dropping like flies out there. That's another way of putting it. First, one of their co-founders, Morris Dees. Now, he had kind of resigned, but he was still coming in the office to do some things. He steps down, and the word is the way he was treating women.
He was forced out.
In the office.
Yeah, basically.
Right. This is what was happening. And then, in the wake of that, and this has kind of happened over the last 48, 72 hours, the SPLC president, Richard Cohen, resigned for undisclosed reasons.
He would have been the number two guy there.
Yes. And now, number three, the center's legal director, Rhonda Brownstein, she has also resigned.
So the top three. The SPLC have had to resign. And from what I can tell, reading about this, and this includes an interview in, I guess it was the New Yorker, from a fellow who worked for them, mm-hmm. SPLC, committed to their cause. Basically, the culture at SPLC did not square with who they said that they were.
No.
In other words, there were charges of racism and sexism and misogyny.
On and on. But the other thing, the other element to all of this, according to this Daily Caller, I think it is, where this article appeared, I think you were saying, it's all about money.
Well, New Yorker had one article too.
Right. Yeah.
Look, SPLC has over how much money?
I think it's over $350 million. I want to say that the latest estimates are up closer to $500 million.
Yes.
A fair amount of which is
storing money offshore.
Offshore.
Yeah.
So how they can maintain their nonprofit status with the IRS is amazing to me, because you're storing up hundreds of millions of dollars. The hate must not be too bad across the country, because you're not spending your money on fighting it. Mm-hmm. You're just socking it away.
Yeah.
Basically. But there are certain standards that the IRS has to grant you a nonprofit status, where you have to spend a certain percentage of your money on your mission.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't just be a nonprofit organization and be about socking away money. And it appears the SPLC, this is what they're – I don't know how they get away with that.
Right.
And maintain their nonprofit status. But this is a big blow to them. Their top three people are out at the SPLC. All right. Brad, thank you for your contributions this hour.
You're welcome.
Ed and I shall return with Steve Jordahl in just a few minutes here on the program Today's Issues on AFR. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.